Everyone, thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. You're listening to episode 16 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Michael W. Austin. Mike is chair and professor of philosophy at Eastern Kentucky University. One of his recent books is Being Good: Christian Virtues for Everyday Life. He is also a regular contributor to the Christian Research Journal. In volume 39, number 4 of the Christian Research Journal, Mike has written an article called Anti-Intellectualism in the Church. Mike, it's good to have you on.
Yeah, it's good to be on. Thank you.
Well, when we talk about anti-intellectualism, it seems to me that there's a larger context to that than just the church, and that is that there's a sense of anti-intellectualism in the culture. So, for example, you mentioned in your article that you think our culture has encouraged feelings over reason. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess one of the things I would say is that in the past, it could have been that maybe we overemphasized intellect in some ways, right? So there's sort of this idea that progress is going to depend on the human mind, right, on its own, figuring out what's true, figuring out how to fix ourselves and fix society. And if we just get the right, you know, education, political system, things like that in place, then we'll reach, you know, we'll make progress. And then over time, we've seen that, you know, the failure of that project. And so I think I would add, especially in our culture, some of the ideas that have come down from at least the philosophical parts of postmodernism, which kind of go to the other extreme and are highly skeptical about any kind of knowledge, especially knowledge about ethics or religion. And so those ideas then get filtered to the media, to the entertainment industry, and people come to people, I think, today mostly would rather be known as a passionate person rather than as a sound thinking person. And of course, the ideal would be to be both of those, but our culture kind of puts them at odds with each other. So that's part of the story, I would say.
I know that I've heard of recent studies that demonstrate how adults are reading less in their lives in terms of reading books less, and also that because of technology and different devices that we have, whether they be smartphones or tablets and so forth, adults are reading, but they're not reading books. They're reading more online articles and so forth that they're scanning. And I heard recently in a news article that people suffer from infomania, which the Oxford English Dictionary calls the compulsive desire to check or accumulate news and information. And it seems like that's a temptation when it seems like something's happening around the world every moment. You have to be up on all of it. Do you think there's a difference between this infomania, this compulsive desire to check your device for stories, and reading a book?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's some similarities maybe, but I think there are some important differences. You know, I think what's interesting about infomania, and there are times in my own life where I think, you know, I just need to unplug more than I am, whether it's, you know, at night or on the weekends or just throughout the day, you know, not trying to keep up with everything. One, because you can't. Two, because I just don't think we're built that way to know about all the junk that's going on in the world, right? I mean, it's good to be informed on some issues and be, you know, do something about them if you can. But yeah, the difference, I think, would be infomania is sort of this, like you said, you scan it, you're trying to decide whether it's worth your time. It kind of goes in one ear and out the other often. Maybe you acquire a lot of factual information, but your understanding, right, is missing, something that, you know, what the ancient philosophers and theologians would call wisdom. So reading the right kind of book, it could be fiction or literature, it could be theology, spiritual growth, whatever it is, if there's some deep ideas that cause you to just examine your life, or that can challenge your thinking, challenge the way you live, that can be, you know, for the Christian, spiritually formative. We can learn something that helps us in our walk with Christ, whereas, you know, scanning a blog post or the latest horror happening in the world isn't necessarily going to do that.
So more specifically from the broader idea of anti-intellectualism in our culture, why do you think there's a problem with anti-intellectualism in the church?
Yeah, I think one reason here is in part a historical one. I think back to all the things that happened in the 19th century with the emergence of Darwinism, evolutionary theory, some of the different philosophical movements in that century, the sort of the emergence of the higher critical view of the Bible, all those things together, what large segments of the church did was, in response to that, they withdrew from those academic institutions, right, the colleges and universities. That was their response to the growing influence of secularism, Darwinism, and sort of the higher criticism approach to Scripture. So I think that's part of it. We went to our silos instead of trying to engage these things in the realm of ideas. But I think, too, you can look to some of the revivalism, so to speak, of some churches and groups at that time and now that often centered on an emotional appeal, maybe, and not so much the truth of the gospel. And, of course, emotions matter, but I would argue they're better, you know, that old cliche, they're better servants than they are masters. So I think that's part of the story, the history. And we're seeing that turn around some now, but I guess, too, I would just say the church has been influenced by the culture more than vice versa in this area as well.
Do you think some topics might cause people to feel intimidated? For example, you mentioned in your article the Trinity. I know a few years ago in church we were studying doctrine, we were studying the Trinity, and a young mom just raised her hand and said, you know I believe in the Trinity, but frankly it has no impact on my daily life raising my kids, so I don't even know why we're studying this. So yeah. How would you respond to a mom who's thinking that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a, even the, you know, the scholar, and I know some that devoted their lives to studying just that doctrine, right, in depth, would say they, if they're appropriately humble and really honest, that they don't fully understand it, right? But there's, I guess the mom like that, I would say you don't need to read their stuff. I mean, I don't read their stuff much. I mean, some I do, but there are some other ways that that doctrine can make a difference, right? It can inform our priorities. So it could say, look, I think I say this in the article, one thing the Trinity tells us is that reality at its most basic level is relational, right? It's Father, Son, and Spirit, and these loving relationships with each other, and they are inviting us into that. And so that would bring value to what she does, you know, when she and her husband are, you know, taking care of a toddler or raising an infant or dealing with a teenager, they're doing something of value, even if in the moment it just seems sort of futile, right? Because there's always one more mess or one more problem. But I would say something like that. Look, it reveals why those relationships have value. And so you're doing, you know, if you can cultivate a bit of love in your family or with your friends that somehow slightly reflects the love the members of the Trinity have for each other, then we're doing what God has called us to do.
So what do you think the church does right in terms of encouraging people to think more deeply than they do?
Yeah, I would say, I was thinking recently in talking to somebody that, I can't believe I'm saying this, but 30 years ago when I was an undergraduate, or 28 years ago in college, there just weren't a lot of resources available to just person in the pew, so to speak, in apologetics or even theology, right? It was more academic stuff that was a little beyond our ability to grasp, but there was some stuff. I remember some stuff from Walter Martin and others and some basic apologetics course, but there's been a real proliferation of that stuff, both in print and online, the past, I would say, 15 or 20 years. And so I guess to think about the church universal, there's much more available to us, and there's been more resources poured in certain segments of the church. So we're doing that right. I think what we need to do is try to get that stuff into the hands of more Christians and help them use those tools in the right ways, whether it's, you know, at work or in the home or just as they interact with others about the gospel. But I think that's one thing they're doing well.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Michael W. Austin, who has written a feature article for the Volume 39, Number 4 issue of the Christian Research Journal, and it's called Anti-Intellectualism in the Church. To read Mike's thought-provoking article, please subscribe to the journal. A six-issue subscription is $39.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. You know, in terms of the church, I know that it seems like there's a dichotomy that believers think that, you know, there's a difference between head knowledge and heart knowledge. So, you know, somebody who has head knowledge might not really have a heart for God and so forth. How does this relate to Christian and anti-intellectualism? Do you think that idea of head knowledge makes people think you're less passionate, as a word you kind of used, about God?
Yeah, I think it does. I think they tend to see those as opposed to each other. In a way it can be. You think of in the New Testament, where I believe it's in the book of James, that even the demons believe in God, right, and shudder. So they have a certain beliefs. So so-called head knowledge is not enough. That's clearly true. You need a, usually what I mean by heart knowledge is maybe a commitment or a love for God. But I guess, I mean, it's just one of those phrases that bothers me, because I think while it's right, we need to cultivate this sort of more passionate relationship with God. But when people talk that way, usually they actually devalue the head knowledge, right? The knowledge of truths about God. So, the most important thing is to love God. But if you don't know anything or you don't know very much about God, it's hard to know how to make sense of what you're doing when you love God. And, of course, Jesus, you know, commands us to love God. He says to do it with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, right? We want to love God with our mind. So I think that relates to anti-intellectualism, because it's an easy out. Right? It doesn't really matter what I know. I just need to love God and obey Him. And I guess what I would say is those things go together, right? They're intrinsically connected to each other.
So what would be a proper role of knowledge in the life of a Christian?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, in every realm of life, I think knowledge is essential, right? It's not all that matters, but it's crucial. We, in our house last week, the air conditioner broke. So I called a friend of mine who repairs them, right? He's got the knowledge required to fix it. If I need to know how to do something, I have to learn from somebody. But we forget that basic truth about the importance of knowledge to accomplish something in the spiritual realm, right? If we want to grow in Christ, we want to be able to love God and other people, got to learn what it means and how to do it. And then we can go to the scriptures, people we respect, tradition. I think, you know, Jesus says it in John 17, that eternal life is knowing God and Jesus Christ, whom you have sent. So this knowledge of God is fundamental. And I think biblically knowledge includes head and heart knowledge. So it would make no sense. And one of my professors, several years ago, a Christian professor, said that you couldn't understand somebody who would have a real devotion to apologetics and a thinking heart about the Christian faith, but not have a heart for people. Right? They want to have a tough mind and a tender heart. And it seems like often that's reversed. We have these tender minds and tough hearts, and that's the opposite of what we're called to.
You're talking about having both heart and passion for Christ as well as knowledge. So, you know, in this day and age, I think people really definitely want to focus on moral virtues like humility, love, compassion, empathy, but not so much on intellect, which can be cold. I think that's how it's usually kind of perceived by people. So how can we have a balance of those things?
Yeah, and I'm really encouraged by the focus on those kind of moral virtues lately, that I feel like that's, people are seeing, right, the role that has in the Christian life. It's not just a matter of certain rules to obey, but what kind of people we become, right, as we imitate and get closer to Christ. But yeah, the intellect is important, because we need something to, I mean, we need wisdom to guide us. And in the biblical tradition, wisdom is both moral and an intellectual virtue, right? We get it from God, but I think we also can cultivate it or grow in it as well, right? I mean, if it was just something God gave us and we just had it, we wouldn't be encouraged to pursue it and seek it, like the Proverbs talk about or as James discusses. So wisdom helps us discern on what to do. So we want to be loving people, right? But there are times where we're not sure what the loving thing to do is. And that's where the the intellectual virtues come in. And it's not that you need to be have a PhD in ethics or be a, you know, read a bunch of theology and apologetics, but just trying to cultivate the mind of Christ can be essential to having the character of Christ.
So what are some practical things then that people can do, Christians can do, to develop their minds and their intellects just on a like a daily level? And then also, if you would tell us how, as Christian parents, we can help our kids, because I know you teach at a university, and so that's a big concern that Christian parents have. Well, my kids are going off to university. How can I equip them to be able to interact with viewpoints that might be different from Christianity, but have intellectual answers for a Christian position?
Yeah, those are good questions. I guess I'll take the individuals part first before parenting is like there's so many Christian resources out there. A lot of it is really good. A lot of it's not so good, but I think there's value in some of the other types of Christian, other kinds of Christian books that are out there. But I think we maybe just pick an issue that you want to learn more about and then look for solid Christian thinkers who've addressed it. I mean, it could be a social issue like abortion or a theological issue, or even just, I mean, it'd be an apologetic issue like why does God allow evil and suffering? But we have one thing that we have more access to now is many Christian thinkers, either themselves or other people, sort of translate their academic work into something that the person on the street could get something out of, right? You don't need to have a PhD to understand what they're saying. Trying to show how these ideas can impact us. Because if you are in a conversation with somebody about the gospel, sooner or later, right, why does God allow evil is going to come up. I think we've got to read a few books that stretch us. I mean, that's how we grow in anything, right? We have to be challenged. I would also say read some old books or books from, theological traditions other than your own. That can help uncover some blind spots maybe and make challenges. For parents, I would say one thing is just to say, look, there in every academic field, there are Christians who have PhDs who are, experts in the field, and they still believe in and follow Jesus, believe in the reliability of the scriptures, those kind of things. So that you might have professors who make it sound like that's not the case, but it is. So it's important just to know that, for one, right? That even if I don't know about this, there's somebody else who shares my commitments that does. Teaching kids some of the skills of critical thinking, right? Having them read. I mean, even as they're young, as they get older, reading some books appropriate to them about the basic tenets of the Christian faith and some basic answers to apologetic questions can be helpful. The key thing I would say is, one, just a healthy skepticism when a professor makes a claim about Christian faith that's sort of a sweeping negative claim that no informed person would believe this, because that's just false. And two is being sort of able to identify some of the assumptions that aren't stated. So someone might, criticize a certain Christian view about something that's really a fringe view in the Christian church, right? Sort of a straw man argument. So I think training our kids to teach how to think, having discussions with them, using resources like the Christian Research Institute, and I think just talking through it with kids, not being afraid to discuss doubts or issues or problems with a teenager before they head out can be really helpful.
So what are some practical things that churches can proactively do to help kind of combat this idea of anti-intellectualism in the church?
Yeah, some of my thoughts here might run counter to some sort of church growth ideas, but I think it fosters a deeper, better kind of growth over the long term. And I really think there should be a sermons once in a while, whether it's a guest speaker or just the pastor themselves, that have some things that are difficult for at least some people in the congregation to understand. It's okay to sort of challenge people and stretch them, right? It's going to actually help people be less passive and a little more engaged, as long as you do it in the right way and don't do it too much or too extremely. I would even consider having like an adult Sunday school class or even a high school Sunday school class where people in the class have to write papers or take tests and they get grades, which sounds crazy. But yeah, I mean, most people learn best in that kind of situation rather than just being
talked at for a while, or just sharing their feelings, all which is important, but we've got to do this as well. Or you could just gather, right, with other people, pick a challenging book and work through it together. And I would say it doesn't even, I mean, it should be in many cases a Christian book, but it could be an influential book written by someone who's not a believer that you can analyze and discuss. Part of, you know, ministering to the culture is kind of trying to understand where people are coming from and what the gospel has to say in response to that. So those are a few things, I guess. And I guess I would add something. I think that an important result of all this stuff is that we become more able to see how the gospel is relevant to everything in life. Right? Developing, I've found that developing a Christian worldview and learning more about it, I have less of a need to come up with sort of contrived ways of starting a spiritual conversation. Right? If I'm able to talk about how the Christian faith relates to money or family or sports or sex or a career or even politics, then it's almost hard not to talk about the gospel because you see how it relates to all these areas.
I know that my husband and I are part of a book club that's been together for about 20 years, actually, and we read some of the bestsellers that are just out in the culture, and that way it's kind of a springboard that we have for non-Christians that we know, like, oh yeah, I've read that book too, and be able to start conversations. In addition, at our church, our pastors have started like a pastor's book club where they pick some titles for the year, and if people are interested in reading those, they read them and get together and discuss. So those are some things in addition to some of the stuff that you talked about. Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Mike. So, Mike, soup or salad?
Salad.
Name something on your bucket list.
Something, go to Greece.
If you weren't a philosophy professor, what would be another dream job?
Soccer coach.
And what period of history most fascinates you and why?
That's a good one. I guess the medieval era, because I think that's a time where the church really preserved, against sort of the stereotypes, the life of the mind for the world, right?
And do you collect anything?
No, I used to collect like baseball and football cards, but somehow they disappeared in a recent move, so no.
Well, thanks, Mike, for being on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you.
Today's guest, Mike Austin, has written a feature article for the Christian Research Journal in Volume 39, Number 4, and it's called Anti-Intellectualism in the Church. To read his article, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is $39.50, and you subscribe by going online to equip.org. In addition, be sure you also tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. To listen to the live stream of the show, as well as previous broadcasts, go to equip.org, where you can also download our free smartphone app, where you can live stream the Bible Answer Man broadcast, listen to previous broadcasts, and subscribe to the Christian Research Journal.